It is that time. It is a Tuesday morning. It is time for KCIM Sports Rewind. Jeff Blankman along with Mason Nealon. We're going to be joined by an extremely special guest, a voice that everybody will know well when we bring him on here in just a moment. But Mason, we're heading into week 7 of the high school football season. That means pretty much the entire fall sports season. We're weeks away from postseason getting underway. It's hard to believe how fast everything's moving.
It was weird when we got done with everything on Friday night and we sat there and talked, is that the first thing that came up was postseason and who do we think is going to make the postseason, what do we think we're going to do with it, and it's weird to sit here and say after week 7 we're 1 week away for a lot of our football teams from being into a week 1 of the postseason.
Let's bring in our special guest, a guy that goes out and broadcasts a lot of football and volleyball for us, and we're bringing him on this week as, the rankings is starting to become something that matter. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to rankings throughout most of the season, but now with the association putting out their rankings, Nick Brinks joining us. This is all of a sudden the rankings become important, and who's ranked where seems to matter.
Yeah, once we reached, I think it was week 5, they started putting out their official rankings rather than you're just relying on coaches' polls and media polls and things like that. Well, now we have what they will use to help determine playoff pairings and all those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's starting to feel real here with just a couple weeks left in the regular season.
And now I know you don't work for the association, and I'm not certainly calling them out, but you're a math guy, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to ask you this. Mason and I both looked at the 3A RPI yesterday, and I know that overall record has a lot to do with it, but I sit here and I'm like, how does Carroll go to Greene County, beat them 35-0 last Friday, and then Greene County's ranked 24th and Carroll's ranked 27th? As a math guy and a guy that loves to crunch numbers, can you explain that to not just to Mason and I, but I think to every Carroll Tiger fan that's probably listening right now?
So when I look at the 3A RPI, to me, the biggest thing that stands out is Greene County's 4-2 overall record compared to Carroll's 3-3 record. The way they break down the RPI, your record is a big chunk of it, and so they look at Greene County, and they're essentially .666 winning percentage. Carroll's at .500, so there's, a .16, .17 difference there, whereas when Carroll, if and when they win 2 or 3 more games to round out the regular season, their percentage should go higher. Greene County's may or may not stay in the same ballpark, but I think as the season goes on, it'll shake out where it should be. I think the worst part about the RPI, whether you lose by 55 or 1 point, it doesn't take into account how close your games are. And as we know, Carroll, they've had some heartbreaking losses and they've had some close wins as well. They all track as 1-0 or 0-1, whereas, this week Carroll beat Greene County by 35, but it might as well have been 35-34. It doesn't matter how the RPI looks at it. But to me, I look at it and it's pretty much just because Greene County is 2 games above 500 right now. Carroll is at 500, but hopefully here in the next few weeks, Carroll can be, 6-3 at the end of the regular season, the district champion, and you can ignore the RPI.
Yeah, and I think, Nick, the other thing that people forget about is the RPI is taking the overall record into account where, as far as, the district race, the non-district games don't mean anything, so all of those Carroll losses don't mean anything, and if you win the district, it doesn't matter where your RPI is at.
All of the 3A districts, you'll find that Carroll's district doesn't have anybody ranked in the top 20 for RPI, but they will take up 2 playoff spots. And if that happens, that might be, impacting the teams that are ranked 15th and 16th that might not get into the playoffs this year because you've got a district where their RPIs are down a little bit. But as far as Carroll's playoff path is, I don't see a world where they have to rely on RPI. I feel like they get through the district as the district champion or the runner-up bare minimum, and so the RPI really won't matter. It will start impacting matchups once you get to that round of the playoffs, but as long as Carroll can get through as a top 2 seed in their district, they'll be in good shape. RPI may not look great, but again, if you win your next 3, that RPI will look a lot better. I would imagine if they finished 6-3 and they did go on to win their last three, and even if they fall and they go 5-4 and, you know, have to go second in the district, I think that RPI will definitely be get up. It'll work its way up to the top 20 or maybe 15 by the end of the regular season.
You've been really our voice, you know, for Kemper all season, you and Doug Waniger. I think you've done four of the first six games for them so far this year. They're clearly number one in Class 2A, so no surprise for them to be the top-ranked team there. I think the interesting thing, Okoboji was number two until they had to go to overtime to win at Southeast Valley this last week. They dropped to number three now in Class 2A. I think the state is having a hard time, and the voters and the committee that they put together, and those guys do a lot of work and do as good a job as they can possibly do. But I think the question for everybody in the state right now, beyond Kemper and Class 2A, who's next? You know, who's two, who's three, who's four? And I think it's been very difficult to figure out who fits in behind Kemper.
It's a good year that, you know, West Lyon's gone. They're out of the class. Last year, the championship matchup was West Lyon and Spirit Lake. Kemper just beat Spirit Lake. They're down a little bit this year. So you take out the championship teams from last year, and it's almost like 2A is wide open this year. And Kemper is taking care of business every week. I know PCM, I would say of everybody I look at here in the top five or six, they're the one team that stands out to me as they've got history and they've had some really good success over the years. I look at Okoboji, they're a new dog in the fight. They're not a team that's accustomed to having a lot of football success. And I think the fact that they're 6-0, maybe the voters are like, wow, they must be really, really good this year. We're not used to seeing them up here. Bellevue, Centerville, Osage, those are the other three teams that are undefeated along with Okoboji and Kemper. And I'll be honest, I don't know anything about those schools. You get into Eastern Iowa and I'm not as well versed in a lot of those schools, and I think you probably feel the same way a lot of times. But yeah, I look at PCM. That's probably the one that would scare me the most. Thankfully for Kemper, as long as they keep rolling, that would not be a matchup that they would see before the championship game. Most likely, I would imagine if you stay one and you stay two, the brackets will work out that would eventually whittle their way down to a potential championship game. But I know I look at Okoboji at three, and at least just comparing like opponents, it helps that they're in the same district. But the teams that Okoboji is beating and the teams that Kemper is beating them much more convincingly. Spirit Lake, for example, it took a last-second field goal for Okoboji to beat Spirit Lake a few weeks ago, 10-7. You look at OABCIG and things like that. In Southeast Valley in particular, I think they're the team that just took Okoboji to overtime this week, if I remember right, whereas Kemper was up 42-0 with a minute left. So I look at their opponents and I say Kemper will clearly have they'll be the favorite going into that week 8 district championship finale with Okoboji, assuming everything, you know, goes according to plan this week. But we'll get a really good test that last week of the season. We'll see how these rankings shake out. And if you're Okoboji, you're right now, if you can get into that week 8, as the number three, it might be setting up a situation for them where if Kemper beats them pretty good or just beats them at all, Okoboji's path to the dome may go through how close that game is. You know, if you get beat big time, you might fall considerably, or if you can keep it close, I think the voters will say, oh, maybe they are for real. So those are a few of the things that I've been keeping an eye on with at least 2A.
Yeah, and when I look at 2A here with that Okoboji matchup, Jeff, tell me if I'm wrong here, but if Kemper were to win, it would almost feel like a matchup between 1 and 2 is inevitable sometime down the line, because you look at that, and if Okoboji falls out of that 3 spot and somebody else climbs up, the only two consistents there would be, for the last couple weeks, PCM and Kemper. So I feel like that Okoboji-Kemper matchup is really a huge matchup when it comes to that Week 8.
It will be. It'll probably decide the district championship more than likely. And if Okoboji would somehow find a way to beat Kemper, they may jump into that one spot because they would be undefeated. I think the thing for Kemper, what you got to be paying attention to and stuff, and Nick, you can probably throw something in on this. You know, Western Christian, you got Okoboji. I doubt they do a rematch, maybe at least not before the quarterfinals with Okoboji, being they're in the same district. So you'll look at potential down the line. Western Christian and Van Meter are really the only other teams in 2A right now in the rankings that you could see for maybe that potential, you know, second round or quarterfinal round matchup that the Knights would get matched up with. So there's not a lot of teams in this half of the state. You mentioned, you know, West Lyon dropping out. They're down to 1A. Central Line, Georgia Little Rock's down to 1A. West Sioux is down to A. So a lot of the teams we've typically seen Kemper have to face, you know, as the 2A playoffs go on, are no longer in 2A. So now all of a sudden it's like, who do they go up against? And I would say Western Christian and Van Meter, potentially the two best favorites that they could see down the line for that right to go to the state, to the Dome.
Yeah, I think you look at those two programs, they're 5-1 for Western Christian. Van Meter's 4-2. They're not undefeated, but you just know that those are teams that are going to be playing their best football this time of year and into the playoffs. And if the rankings remain how they are, that Van Meter matchup, I mean, that could be a round of 16 matchup. Western Christian could be a quarterfinal matchup. I mean, if they want to look at Kemper and Western Christian as the 1-8, if the rankings didn't change, I mean, that would be a pretty easy one to say, yeah, let's make that a quarterfinal matchup in Carroll. I don't know that I would want to have to match up with either of those two. I do know that Western Christian beat Spirit Lake earlier this year by 4, and Kemper was up 28 in the fourth quarter with a minute left this week. So I know you can't always extrapolate how it works out from one opponent to another when you have common opponents, but when we look at it, everything that I look at tells me, yeah, Kemper, they're beating these other teams by more than the other teams are beating them. So you would think that it could be a matchup that they should handle. But again, teams can have an off night. Teams can have their best game of the season when you're not expecting it, and anything's possible. But yeah, I could definitely see those being potential playoff teams for Kemper, especially when there's not a whole lot in Northwest or really Western Iowa. You look at the top 10 in 2A, you've got Kemper, Okoboji, Western Christian. That's about it for what I would consider Western Iowa. And then you can throw in PCM and Van Meter kind of central, and then I think everybody else is pretty well east. So they do try to keep geography in the scope of the conversation somehow. I would hope that's not the top deciding factor for some of these matchups, but the way it's shaping up, there's not a whole lot of Western Iowa flavor in there, so there will be some interesting decisions when they get there.
Yeah, I know, Jeff, for you, you probably know it a little better than I do being around here longer, but if I'm Kemper, I'm still worried about if Van Meter comes to town, them being Van Meter, because I know Van Meter's football has kind of been very tradition-heavy, and I know that they've been kind of good for a while down line. So if I'm Kemper, you know, I'd rather see Western Christian with the better record still come to town just because of the fact of, you know, Van Meter knows that they've been to the Dome before, they've been there, and they know how to get back.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you on the Van Meter, but Western Christian also one of them. They've been down maybe the last few years, but there's an awful lot of tradition. They're one of those typical Northwest Iowa teams, like your West Lyon, like your West Sioux, like your Central Georgia Lyon, Central Lyon, Georgia Little Rock, you know, your Sioux Centers, your Heelans. They just seem to win a lot. They have big physical kids. They're athletic. So I know Nick just mentioned that Western Christian didn't beat Spirit Lake by a lot, but, you know, you get up there in Northwest Iowa and those teams always don't beat each other by a lot because they play each other all the time and they know each other well. Let's move on now, guys, from 2A, because I think Kemper right now, to me, just looks like the clear favorite to probably win 2A, and I would agree with what Nick said. I think Prairie City Monroe, probably the one team that if you look at it right now would be probably the scariest competition for them. But I look at Audubon and 8-Man, our other team that's in the rankings in their class, and they're still sitting at 5. And I know from some of the text groups that I'm in, there's an awful lot of debate of why one of the teams is ranked above them and stuff. And I think Audubon's chomping at the bit maybe to get an opportunity to see them. But, you know, you look at Bishop Garrigan, traditionally has been really, really good. Woodbine is flat loaded. Gladbrook Rhinebeck is really, really good. I still think that Audubon team, and Nick, we'll get your thoughts first, and then I think Mason here in a second. But I know you haven't seen Audubon yet, but I know you follow things. That Audubon team, it's hard to say that, you know, you rank number five and you're underrated, but I think they've been underrated all season long.
It seems like every week they're making a statement. Coming into the season, it sounded like they had graduated a lot of their top performers from last year, and coach was super confident that he liked what he had coming back, and they have been just absolutely dominant. I think, was it the game you had a couple weeks ago? They gave up negative yards in the whole game. I mean, that's just crazy. They're playing at such a high level on both sides of the football. Coach Burks has them playing really, really well. For Audubon, it would be great to see somebody ahead of them get upset before the end of the season, just to make it easy, and you don't have to rely on votes and things like that. But you'd certainly want to be a top four, so you don't have to travel for that quarterfinal round if you can help it. I think if you're Audubon, you're hoping to just continue making statements here the next couple weeks, or if you can get lucky and somebody ahead of you falters one week, and you can kind of leapfrog them that way, because right now they've got the top seven are all undefeated. If you could get one of those Iowa Valley, Gladbrook, Rhinebeck, Woodbine, Bishop Kerrigan, if you could just get one of those to maybe be upset, I think that could make a lot of things easier for voters and certainly for the Wheelers. But they're going to continue playing their brand of football. They've got a big rivalry test this weekend. They've been fun to watch.
Yeah, they have been, and Mason, I'll have you on here in just a second. Nick, you mentioned, you know, somebody getting upset. The last time they made to the Dome and they made it to the state championship game, ended up falling to Cam. Audubon got sent east and had to go to Southeast Iowa, and I think that I think for them they remember that, and it's in their mind of, hey, we're okay going that direction, because the last time we went that direction, we had an awful lot of success. Mason, I know you've been following them hard. I talked to Coach Burks this morning. You catch up with him every other week as well. You know, that team's been just so good this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a different story from 2A than it is from 8-man. 2A, it's a little bit of a down year, so it makes Kemper at that one seed pretty easy. But for 8-man, it looks like 8-man's kind of in an uprising this year. Everyone in that top seven undefeated, and it makes it hard on them as well. I know we saw that Woodbine game against Coon Rapids, and Woodbine looks pretty solid as well. But for Audubon, if you're in that top four, you're guaranteed to be at home all the way up until the quarterfinal, if that's what I'm getting from this. But I know that Audubon isn't scared of going anywhere. I know that if Coach Burks is listening right now, he'd probably agree as well that they're probably not scared to go anywhere out east or anywhere else as well. But, I mean, for a team that has done so well this year, it's weird to not see them within that top four.
Yeah, and I don't know if they'll get there. I don't know if anybody in front of them really has anybody. I know Gladbrook's got a couple of district tests, but probably should roll through those. So I don't know if anybody undefeated right now in that district or in 8-man is going to end up getting beat.
I think Iowa Valley faces, I can't remember who it was, but they have like a top 10 matchup for this week before going into a matchup, or it's either this week or the last week of the season. They have a top 10 matchup, so I think that's Audubon's best chance of getting in there, is if Iowa Valley either has a really close game to end the season, or if they were to fall, I think Audubon's best chance to leapfrog them there. But if you're Audubon, I think that the way to get in is to just keep doing what you did like last week and go put up 84-0s, or, you know, just like a 60-7 or something that you've been doing all season.
Well, and for the Wheelers, they're going to have to get by a very good Coon Rapids Baird team coming up this Friday night. Crusaders, what most people probably aren't realizing is a Crusaders win, and they win the district championship. They're still in that hunt, and people, even though they got beat bad by Woodbine this last week, and they can't forget about them. Nick, we're just going to get some quick thoughts from you. Anything standing out for you volleyball-wise with any of the volleyball that you went out and done for us so far this year?
I've seen Coon Rapids Baird twice. I will see Carroll for the second time tonight. I've got ESAC and South Central Calhoun later this week. But just having seen Coon Rapids Baird play twice, they've been really fun to watch. Malia Clayburgh, she's kind of playing at another level right now. And, you know, with Cook hitting 1,000 for assists as a sophomore, she's playing so well. And I joked with her after the game. It's like, all right, well, you're on your way to 2,000 now. You should have no problem getting there as long as things keep going. But yeah, they're playing really well. They've been fun to cover the last couple weeks But yeah, I haven't seen a ton of volleyball yet. I feel like this week I'll almost double my games for the year in 1 week. It's going to kind of feel like a playoff week for me, having three nights of games this week instead of just one or two overall. But I'm looking forward to it. Carroll at Gilbert. I got that one tonight. And Carroll beat Gilbert last year. Carroll's still looking for their first conference win of the season. And I have to take advantage of all of my Raccoon River trips. I don't know how long they're going to last. It's either the last year or maybe next year. We'll see. Our Raccoon River beat will be coming to an end here soon. So I've got to take advantage of every game I get.
And Nick, what I'm gathering from you is you want a much heavier volleyball schedule next year. Is that what I'm gathering from you?
I suppose I might be able to say that, but there might be somebody else in the house that says, no, you're good with the number you're getting.
Well, Nick, we thank you for your time here today. And we knew that you'd have some valuable information because I know how much you like to break down numbers. So it was fun after getting the rankings coming out to bring you on. So appreciate you joining us here today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Nick Brinks again, of course, one of our broadcasters here with the Carroll Broadcasting Sports Network. Jeff Blankman, Mason Elan with you here. We're going to step away. We'll take a break. We've got our sack of the game that we've got to announce, and we'll talk a little bit more high school and college sports coming up next here on Sports Rewind.
As the athletes at your house prepare for hard work and fun of the season, remember that St. Anthony Rehab Services provides physical therapy for any sports injury that may sideline your member of the team. Sports injuries can plague kids of all ages and keep them from playing the sport they love. Athletes will be under the direct supervision of a certified and licensed healthcare professional in the newly renovated sports performance facility. If an injury is keeping your athlete out of the game, call St. Anthony Rehabilitation Services at 794-5000 for sports injury and treatment rehab.
Thanks to Bad Authority there again for allowing us to use some of their music here on the Carroll Broadcasting Sports Network. It's our theme kind of anymore for Rewind and also for our Brinks Exterior preview show that we do on Friday nights. Always seems to get slidden into there. Mason, you know, we've got a sack of the game to announce here. We're going to let you do the sack first. You had a young man that had three of them the other night in your game.
Yeah, Ty Mulbauer had three of them for the Carroll Tigers against Greene County. And, you know, not one of them specifically was more impressive than the other, but the fact that he got three, and it almost felt like he was more of sitting at, like, five or six when you looked at the way that he got to the quarterback. I felt like he was just, and he's been impressive all season as a defensive end. He's a kind of a faster kid at defensive end, and he uses a lot of different finesse moves to get to a quarterback, but it felt like he had a lot of pressure on quarterback Zach Stalder for Greene County all night. So Ty Mulbauer, our sack of the game from Carroll High.
So you talk about his quickness. There's a word that football coaches throw out a lot that I'm going to throw at you and see if is he twitchy? Is that what he is? Is he twitchy out on the field?
Never heard that before.
You've never heard that before? Okay. Well, then we will move on. So, again, congratulations to him, and also congratulations to our free sack of groceries from Market on 30. That is Kay Logren of Breida is our winner this week. So congratulations again to Kay Logren of Breida.
Good morning, all student-athlete parents. Don't let your hectic schedules keep you from feeding your family. The Market on 30 can help you with quick and easy options like Pasquale's Pizzas, our famous mac and cheese, chicken strips, and much more. The Market on 30 in the BP Plaza.
Mason's giving me kind of a weird look over there. I had never used that hotkey. It's on John's page. It was called Heavy Metal Riff. So a little different than what we normally play here.
Yeah, that scared me because, you know, I usually hear the Bad Authority coming back in there, and I know that's what I was looking for. And then I heard that, and I'm like, why is that playing?
I had to see. I wonder what I'll have to ask John sometime what he uses Heavy Metal Riff for during his show during the morning.
But maybe when he's bored, he'll just put his headset on and listen to heavy metal riffs for an hour.
That could be. So I asked, Nick, and he kind of brought up that he hasn't seen a ton of volleyball this year. So for you, what has stood out for you with what you've seen so far this volleyball season?
With this being the first year of me doing volleyball, I had kind of not understood the game deeply. But going out and learning from you and learning from other people, I've understood it a little bit better now. But when you look at the teams in our area, I've covered a good Coon Rapids team, good IKM Manning team, East Sac's really good, Kemper's really good. You cover all this good volleyball in this area, and it's like, you know, it's just different to see that somebody like Kemper who's in 3A compared to somebody like Coon Rapids who's in 1A, the difference in competition that some teams play and the different styles that they play. It just feels like, you know, you're watching completely different worlds of volleyball sometime, even though it's still a good volleyball all the way around.
And I know you've got a better memory than me, so you're going to probably have to help me out. Amelia Cook from Coon Rapids just went over 1,000 assists last week. Jordan Carroll up at East Sac County became the all-time assist record holder for East Sac County. I know we had Anna Hart here recently, went over 1,000 digs. Who am I missing that recently broke a record?
Elsa Tiefenthaler and Kaylee Simons both broke a record at the CYO tournament. I can't remember the exact number, but I'm pretty sure one of them was 1,000 and one of them was 2,500. They can intermatch there. I think for Elsa it was possibly 1,000 assists, and I think for Kaylee it was 2,500 digs. Don't quote me on that. But I think that's what it was. I saw them both holding signs and taking pictures, and that's kind of the universal signal of I just did something worth noting.
Yes. So you mentioned some of the good teams here. Who has stood out for you right now as players?
For me, it's I think Carly Arp down at IKM Manning. She's top five in assists in their class there. I think she's done a nice job of getting it. You know, they have a good group of hitters there, but I think for volleyball, it starts with the setter. You can have a bunch of good hitters, but if the setter can't get the ball to the hitters really can't do much there. So I think that starts there. You know, you have to look down at Anna Hart and Malia Clayburgh down at Coon Rapids. Malia doing a lot of the hitting roles down there, taking kind of that senior leadership and putting them kind of on their back in some of the games that they've been tight with. You've seen them go to Malia Clayburgh, and I think, you know, you can't name one girl at Kemper that's really done a whole lot there.
They're
when
loaded.
It comes to,
yeah,
like, the best on that team. You really just have to name all of Kemper, because any given night you can have a girl go out there and get 17 kills, but I think that it also starts there with Kaylee and Elsa. I think that those two have had a really big impact with Brianna Wittrock out. A lot of other girls have stepped up. You got to give credit to Addie Antover as well. You got to give credit to Mariah Houghton and Colby Peter, who have stepped up in the absence of Brianna Wittrock.
And Brianna Wittrock, from what I understand, going to be back this week. Don't know how big the role will be early on, but from everything I understand, she's cleared and will be back this week. So you're one of the top teams in the state in your class in Kemper, and now you're getting what was maybe your best player back. We had her as our Rewind Player of the Year a year ago. I will tell you that I've been kind of starting to break down some of my Rewind stuff. It's not going to be easy figuring out for volleyball who our Player of the Year is, and for football who our offensive or defensive Players of the Year. We've got a lot of people in the hunt for those.
Yeah, I've started to break down some numbers too, and I look at it and there's a group of probably, I'd say 10 that I've got in volleyball right now where I'm like, you're probably in that hunt right now.
Right.
And I think that with these last couple weeks, it'll probably whittle down, but it's weird because I'm like, I'm looking at it and I have double digit people of, you know, you could possibly win it if you have a good end of the season. And for football, it's like, how do you even pick an offensive player of the year with how many different teams have? Because I go through it. I'm like Aiden Kiergaard, Brock Bading. You got Caden Oswald, Ethan Bauer. You just
Wyatt Regaler.
You got all these
yeah.
different guys, and especially yeah. an eight-man, that's going to make it hard. But you have all these different guys that can win offensive player of the year. In defense, it's even harder because you have so many good defensive players in this area.
Well, and I said this to you guys after the games last Friday. We were standing around talking after the scoreboard show. I mean, if you're going to go straight off of numbers, which you can't do because Audubon's guys have won by so many points every week that a lot of times their starters are playing a quarter to a quarter and a half. So when you look at their overall numbers, they don't match up with some of the other guys. It's just because everybody else is mainly getting to play full games every week, where they're beating everybody by so much that their guys aren't getting the opportunity to get the carries on offense or the receptions or the tackles on defense. When you hold a team to three and out on every possession and you're only out there for two possessions or three possessions because you're up 40-0 already in the second quarter and then you sit the rest of the game, you're not going to average 10, 11, 12 tackles a game because you're only out there for 8 or 9 defensive plays in a game.
Yeah, and that's what makes it hard not seeing Audubon. And I know you've seen them, but for me, I haven't seen them. And it's like, I haven't seen the impact that some of these defensive players or offensive players are going to make for the team. I'll just have to go off of the numbers and then what, you know, you guys tell me or what Sean will tell me
right.
different guys are doing. But for them, it's like that's hard. You know, beating teams is great for them to beat teams by 80, but it's hard for us to pick our rewind athletes when they're beating teams by 80.
And that's why we have a big crew of everybody that helps vote. And I kind of bring that up because I know there are sometimes people will message us and say, well, so-and-so had more tackles than so-and-so. How did they get above? Well, when you look at overall, you know, you got to look at everything. Statistics just aren't the only thing that can determine things. Got a couple other sports I want to hit here before we go and end the show. I know we're going to go just a little bit over here today, but Charlotte Schwabe wrapped up a great tennis season for Kemper last week, finishing fifth down at the state tournament. I know you got a chance to watch her. We type about her and the girls every night when they would play during the regular season. But what a special run and special season for Charlotte this year. Kind of came into the season preseason-wise, not a lot of people realized that Kaylee Simons, with it being moved to the fall, wasn't going to be able to do volleyball and tennis. So Kaylee came in as kind of their number one according to the rankings. But Charlotte had to grab that role this fall and did an outstanding job with it.
And I think a lot of people lucked out that they didn't have a duo of Kaylee Simons and Charlotte Schwabe, because if you have that, there's a chance that Kemper sends two girls to state.
Or the whole team.
Yeah, and it's scary like that. But you look at it, Charlotte really filled that role pretty well. They play different styles of tennis. You know, Kaylee's able to get to almost every ball and put different balls in different positions. Charlotte, a lot more power behind her swing there. But when you looked at it, it was almost up until, middle of the season tournament that she was undefeated, and then she only lost two matches going into state there. But I felt like she was kind of impressive on the season when it came to her record as well as how well she filled that number one role.
Yeah, and a 5-1 run down at the state tournament, ran into the Gabby Jacobs young lady from Shenandoah in the quarterfinals that she had suffered one of her regular season losses to in a tight match and ended up losing in a tight one there. It was 2-0, but 7-5, and I think it was the second set and stuff, so played really well against her. But congratulations to her on an outstanding season. And then cross country, I'm going to drag you, I think, up to Lake City later on today, because I don't know if I've gotten you to a cross country meet yet this year, so it'll be your first experience. But we've got ESAC and South Central Calhoun running up there later on today. Should be about a perfect day for cross country and stuff. But we'll go up and get some interviews with some of our area runners. But what stood out for you so far? I know for me it's been the ESAC boys and the success that they've had so far. Kemper boys have had a nice year, led as well by Dayton Wiederin. But, you know, for me, the ESAC boys, five championships at cross-country meets this year and two other second-place finishes. So that's what's jumped off for me. For you, what stood out?
Yeah, it's ESAC right there. And I think that in almost every meet, they've had two, if not three, guys within the top 15 or top 10. And it's just impressive to see that half of your team right there is just going into that top 10. They're going out there and they're pushing each other. And to get five championships this early into the season, that's hard to do. And I know that they're out there pushing themselves and trying to get better every day as well. So down the stretch here, it's good to see. Hopefully them make a run at getting a couple guys, if not the whole team, down to state.
You bet. Well, Mason, appreciate you coming in again today. And you looking forward to going up to Lake City later on today?
Well, this is the first of me hearing of it, so I guess I will.
Yeah, I didn't break that to you until we were on the air, right?
Yeah, you were waiting to surprise me until we were on the air.
I wanted to see the look on your face.
I've never been to cross country, so yep. I guess we'll see now.
You bet. Well, I tell you what, everybody, thanks very much for joining us here for KCIM Sports Rewind. We'll have the man that usually monitors and runs things much better than me, John Ryan, hopefully back on the show coming up next week.